We are back, Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith, and in this particular segment, we have Mr. John Burnett. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let me, if I may, Mr. Burnett, read a little bit about you, and I'm going to read a first couple of sentences from an article you've just written, and I'd like to get your response to get this started, okay?
Sure.
Mr. Burnett is a financial services executive with over 20 years of experience in risk management, operations, governance, and compliance of some of the world's top financial services and business information companies such as Citibank, McGraw-Hill Financial, Merrill, Morgan Stanley, among others. He has just written an article which caught our attention called The Cyber Currency Dilemma, and I'm going to read the first couple of sentences and ask for your comment on them. Venture capitalists and other investors are betting hundreds of millions of dollars on the latest innovation from the high-tech world called virtual currency. And it promises to transform how America and the rest of the world do business, allowing people to send money instantly, anytime, and anywhere without banks, credit card companies, or other financial middlemen. With that, Mr. Burnett, please, your comments.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
That is a mouthful.
Well, you know, Wall Street will always try to corner a market in its infancy stage. So you can't blame Wall Street or investors that try to corner a market. With that said, the proliferation of this new technology is spreading quite fast. There are a lot of people that are interested in Bitcoin, that open accounts, that are engaging in what's called mining to help spread the word and create a greater level of liquidity.
Could you give us a definition of what a Bitcoin is? Because many people have asked, and there seems to be some confusion.
Yeah, with anything, there's always going to be a little apprehension and confusion from the outset. But you know, if I can just simplify it, I would say that it's a new payment system that is decentralized, which is also a digital currency with no central authority or banking system. And it's based on a peer-to-peer network that's powered by its users, which is quite different than what we're accustomed to. Our current money system is controlled by central banks. And to my knowledge, there are only three countries on the planet that don't have a central bank. So it's widely adopted in terms of having a central authority. And the central authority works with banks that handle transactions. So this is quite revolutionary and different than what we're accustomed to. And for those transactions, the banks and intermediaries charge, you know, a considerable fee for those transactions, which can be upwards to 2 to 3%.
All right, Mr. Burnett, this is Roland Smith. Thank you again for joining us on Smith Sabatino. You just talked about that the Bitcoin ethic has absolutely no central authority. And
Right. Basically
what you're suggesting is that we, as a participants in that, or even in the monetary system of the United States, we have to have some faith that there will be a sustained value in what we accumulate. Is that accurate?
Well, with anything, whether it be a good service, actually foreign exchange, or even a stock or any type of investment, is always subjected to some type of fluctuation or volatility. I think to answer your underlying question, I think it would be best described as, with our normal banking system, there is someone you can call, someone that you can report potentially fraudulent transactions. If you lose your password, there is a help desk that you can call to reset your password. The virtual currency is quite the opposite. If you lose your password, there's no one to call. If there's fraudulent activity, I'm quite sure you can escalate it to some regulatory authority. However, they don't, at this point, completely govern the virtual currency market. They're actually in the process of learning it themselves. And, you know, just like with any other innovative technology, many times the laws or the regulatory landscape engages in a catch-up game because regulation and laws usually lag behind innovation. So with that said, I think, you know, New York State is about to issue some type of regulatory guidance and a Bitcoin or virtual currency, I should say, license that's required in order to operate a currency exchange.
What is the downside of Bitcoin for the unaware who have no idea what they're doing, but they just think they might make some money out of it?
Well, I would encourage everyone, whether it be virtual currency or any other type of investment, to make sure that they do their homework first and only invest money that they're willing to lose or have the capacity to lose. No one should go in with a blindfold, not knowing what they're getting into.
We have, Mr. Burnett, about 3.5 minutes left, and I want to ask you, how do you see this in the future? If we can give you a crystal ball, give us your sense of the future of Bitcoins, because in your article, you've noted that the virtual currencies like Bitcoin offer promise and peril. Give us a future look. Crystal ball.
Well, free markets are always a good thing. At this juncture, I don't think that we should overregulate it. I think we should put some type of controls, accountability, and transparency in place. And I think, you know, many people, as evident by the early adoption, it's catching on and it's proliferating. However, again, we need some controls in place, and we also need to make sure that if it is something that should be adopted, we can, just like the traditional banking system, that we can ensure that it's not being used for illicit transactions. Additionally, there are concerns with respect to hacking. We've seen a lot of situations with some retailers and even Sony of late, where their enterprise has been subjected to, you know, virtual attacks. So we have to make sure that we can implement a system not only in the U.S. but globally, and adopt this type of transaction payment system that can benefit not only consumers but merchants and our overall global commerce.
Can you see a coming together of the two systems, central banking system and this system, at some point where they can transact business together in, I'll use the cyber term, a gateway between the two different systems?
Well, as I highlighted in the article, you know, as far as Coinbase, that has some question marks, many investors, as well as the New York Stock Exchange, have heavily invested in it. So I think there is some possibility of a convergence of platform and system. Right now, it's just a matter of making sure that there are proper controls in place. We don't want illicit behavior or terrorist activity to be able to exchange funds or launder money to hide the actual nature or source of those funds. We want to make sure that we implement the right amount of controls and then make sure that we can gain a lot of scale out of it to make sure that it's widely adopted. So there is an opportunity. We just have to make sure that we implement the right amount of regulation that's not overbearing, but also can protect consumers.
Can you tell me where what the derivation of Bitcoin is? Do you know that?
Don't know it offhand, but I know that it does fluctuate, just like anything else that has value.
Yeah. So do derivatives.
Yes. and margins, okay?
Exactly. And a lot of people have been asking questions with respect to the formulas behind Bitcoin and things of that nature. And what I found to be most interesting is that no one asked about the formulas behind all the structured products that led to the financial collapse in 2008. Those formulas are far more complex.
Well, that is a subject for another time, but that you raise a very, very interesting point. We're going to bring you back. Mr. Burnett, I want to thank you very, very much. John Burnett, talking with us today here about cybercurrency and its dilemma. And you've raised some very interesting, provoking thoughts. And we thank you very much for joining us here on Smith Sabatino.
Thanks for having me.
Carl, I want to start a Bitcoin kind of thing.
You do.
I want to call it Gazornenplatz. And then here's what we do.
We
go out to lunch.
Yes.
If I pay so many Gazornenplatzes
yes.
for the two of us.
That's correct.
And next week you should pay so many Gazornenplatzes for in return.
I knew we were going to run down this road. Because you and I are both looking at each other, trying to get our arms around this. And it seems in some respects highly speculative.
Well, indeed, it is. But it's also interesting, and it's also here.
It's here.
So we've got to deal with it.
And it's not going away.
Right.
I can see this as being the future in some respects, and that's why I asked the question, will there be a gateway between the two systems?
As kids, it used to be marbles.
Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith as we play marbles. We're back.
Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
We're programmed to think that our individual effort is what matters most, but your network can produce results that you can't produce on your own.
And it can produce them faster. For example, we had an idea for a business. We talked with a friend in the industry. As a result, we came up with a better idea.
We could have done it alone, but we had another friend whose business dovetailed with ours. By working together, we went from idea to launch in weeks instead of months.
Developing a business together at that speed couldn't have happened if the relationship didn't exist already. It requires trust, and trust is built over time.
So think about the people you've already built trust with. What big things could you do faster together? The answer leads to big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
Get set for spring with a free Lancome gift exclusively at Macy's. Receive new Visionaire, Definisil, and Biofacil. Choose a day cream blush and gloss duo in a cosmetics bag with any $35 or more Lancome purchase. Spend $70 or more and pick an additional duo. Visit your Lancome counter today only at Macy's.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This four-time All-Star scored over 600 goals in his 18-year career, including 73 in the playoffs. He was convicted of assault in 1988 after attacking player Luke Richardson with his stick.
That is a clear flagrant. They should be gone from the game, and he is. What for? Come on, Dino.
Everybody milling around. Boom. The sucker's Ciccone. He wasn't even looking at him.
So where is Dino Cicerelli now? After 8 long years of eligibility, Dino was finally inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2010. He owned Nightclub 22 in Shelby Township, Michigan, a club named after his jersey number. Nightclub 22 closed its doors in 2011, but shortly after, Dino opened Cicerelli's Sports Bar Theater at that same location.
Coffee shot hits a man, and then out of the air, Dino Cicerelli picks that one off. Good hand-eye by Cicerelli.
Dino Cicerelli, still scoring. I'm Ahmad Rashad.